I think so.
Okay.
Just a minute. I will find out.
Christina, do you have the Adobe Connect window open?
I do not. I'm actually just going through my email. For some reason, that didn't make it into my calendar, so I'm trying to dig that up right now.
Okay. Thanks.
Ah, and I just have it from Glenn. Here we go.
Chuck?
Yes, Bill.
Could you with this document that you've prepared, did you send that to the list, or can I download it directly off here, or not sure how this is?
I'm sorry, the my own personal summary that I did, is that what you're talking about, of
yeah.
The AOC review? I didn't do anything with it except send it to the council list. So
you did send it.
Yeah. That was sent, you know, before our meeting last week. So I don't have any problem with it. Margie, could you add that to the Adobe Connect window?
It's in there. Isn't that what's showing
right
now?
It
yeah,
isn't. Oh,
it
I'm
is.
Looking at it. It's right there. Okay. Good enough. Sorry.
Chuck, shall I do the roll call, Sally? Sorry, and then we can start because
yes.
The recording has been started.
Okay, you did confirm that. Thank you. Go ahead, Glenn.
Thank you. On the call, we have Zaid Jamil, Margie Milam from staff, Chuck Gomes, Caroline Greer, Wolf Ulrich Knoben, Bill Drake, Christina Rosette, and Liz Gaster, also from staff, and myself, Glenda Saint-Jury. Thank you very much.
Okay. I'll kick things off as GNSO Council Chair, and I'm on this group in that capacity, not representing the registry stakeholder group. Caroline will take care of the representing the registries in this regard. I think one of the first tasks we need to do after a brief statement in terms of what our task is to see if we have a volunteer and confirmation of someone who would be our leader and this little drafting team. The purpose, as I suggested in the council call last week, is to very quickly come up with some at least an outline of some draft comments that the GNSO Council could submit in response to the proposed AOC review approach that staff posted, and that's due at the end of the month, so there's not a lot of time, especially since we all want to have plenty of opportunity to vet any proposed comments with our various groups. So we're shooting to get a first crack at that done, if possible, this week so that we can start vetting it further. A second task besides that is to start working on a plan that we can also propose to the council for how nominees would be endorsed by the GNSO. Any draft team members from this group would be endorsed by the GNSO. There are no procedures in the proposed plan for that. It essentially is left up to the SOs and ACs to do that, nor, to my knowledge, do we as a stakeholder group have any process specifically for that. So we need to come up with that. Now, there's just one of the reviews that is kicking off very quickly, and that's the Accountability and Transparency Review. And so that's the one where we will have a need to have a process for very quickly. All that said, I hope that everyone has reviewed the not only the affirmation of commitments, but the proposed approach that for which comments have been solicited. So we won't take time to review that. Certainly, if people have questions, we can talk about that. That said, is there someone that would like to volunteer to kind of take lead? There have been a couple people on the list that have have you know, taken some lead there in a nice natural way. So if any of you willing to do that, any suggestions by of someone on the list? Both Bill and Caroline kind of took the lead in generating comments and so forth. Either one of you willing to kind of be our overall coordinator? It's going to be a short-lived little drafting team because of the time constraints, but it would be helpful to have someone that kind of takes charge. Caroline or Bill, either one of you willing to do that?
Sorry, I'm hesitating because I have things going on in the next few days, but I can do it.
Okay, Bill? All right, thanks. I appreciate that. So if that's okay with you, I will turn this call over to you, and I'll just participate like everyone else.
Well, that's fine. But I was asking about your document, Chuck. Is there a way to just download this document directly out of Adobe Connect? I'm not figuring it out.
So you're not able to download it from Adobe Connect? Is that what you said?
I don't know how to.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't tried. Hey, tell you what, I will send it to the list while you go ahead and kick off some discussion here. Okay?
Okay. Well, that's fine. I would have just used it to type on. All right. Well, then, as we discussed on the list that was set up for this meeting, there are several different components. I haven't read Chuck's thing yet, so I'm not sure how much he goes into all this. But the first obvious point was the question of the size of the group, which we discussed on the conference call, on the council call. And if you've seen Giannis's response to Chuck's email, it appears Giannis's thinking was not inconsistent with some of the sentiment that we expressed in the conference call. I don't know. Has everybody read Giannis's message?
Yes.
I assume everybody has. So Giannis is suggesting that the ANTRT should have 15 members, one-third government and two-third non-governmental, in which case main SOs should have more than one representative in. So we were sort of suggesting ourselves that that might be desirable. So it seems like that won't be a very hard case to push if Giannis is on board with that thinking. But does anybody have any particular thoughts on the question of size or how we should address it in the letter? If not, we can just draft. Somebody wants to help me draft, so we can just draft a couple of paragraphs quickly stating the premise and maybe move on from that.
Since nobody else is saying anything, let me ask a few questions. These are just if we have more than one GNSO drafting team member, and let's say we go with, I think it was Olga's suggestion that there be at least two, one from each house, how would any thoughts in terms of how we would obviously, there are two stakeholder groups in each house. Has anybody thought through some of the issues with regard to how we would do it? Select one. Does it matter which stakeholder group they come from? Issues like that are bound to come up as we deal with it within the GNSO.
This is Christina. I'm very leery at this point of our saying, okay, the person on this review team A is going to be from the registry stakeholder group, and the person on review team B is going to be from, you know, the commercial stakeholder group, and C is going to be from non-commercial, and D is going to be registrar, until we know who's interested and what they identify as kind of their, for lack of a better word, qualifications.
And, of course, one of the things we need to do is to figure out what qualifications we really think apply as well.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that we should strive to have, you know, when all is said and done, a representative that each stakeholder group that is interested in having a member on our review team has had an opportunity for that person to be considered. But I don't want to assign slots at this point.
It's Will speaking. So I have the one question. When I read through the teams, so I understand, for example, that the security stability team, there shall be one or two members from the GNSO, CCNSO, ASO, and ALEC all together. So that's what I understand that means. It could happen that the GNSO is not in a position to be qualified or to be selected to have one member in this team. Is that correct?
That's how I read it, and I raised concerns about that on the list, I think, before you were added, Wolf. I don't know how other people feel, but it seems to me GNSO needs to be there for sure, rather than sharing a limited number of slots.
And that certainly it could be a position we take in our comments.
Yeah.
But how do we deal with Christina's point?
This is Caroline. I mean, it seems like we're sort of working in a vacuum. I mean, one of the questions that we had raised was there any possibility of getting an early insight of the list of criteria that the selectors themselves would use to select the review team members? And, you know, in the absence of seeing that, we're really working in the dark here. I mean, you know, we don't know what they're going to use, so therefore, you know, what are we going to use? Are we going to be completely at odds with, you know, whatever they consider to be important? I certainly think that's something we should push for in the comments.
And it from Giannis's response to the questions I sent, I got the idea that he himself, I don't know about Peter, but he himself is looking for the public comment period to guide him in that selection process.
Yeah, Giannis did seem, you know, fairly wide open. I take it you got no response from Peter on anything, Chuck, no?
I have not seen anything from Peter.
I suspect that Giannis will be particularly attentive to the question of geographic balance, given his experience in WSIS and IGF and all those other contexts as well, and the governmental concerns about that, which raises some challenge for GNSO, given our composition.
Now, back to Christina's question, it seems to me that we need to try, and unfortunately, like Caroline said, I think we're going to have to do it in somewhat of a vacuum as far as the rest of the community and the selectors, et cetera. So, but it's to decide what really are the qualifications. The document does give some high-level qualifications of the people that are going to be reviewers. But Bill, I think, was the first one to raise the really critical question. Are the review team members there to represent their respective groups in the review process? Or, in contrast to that, are they there to do an objective review based on the criteria that have been established? Those are very different roles and would significantly influence the people that you would want there. On a side discussion I had with Bruce Tonkin on this subject, he and I were talking about, you know, would it be better to have insiders doing on these review teams, or would it be better to have people who have a good understanding of the community but aren't necessarily insiders? That's the kind of question I think we need to answer in this process. And until we know the qualifications, how do you really decide? You just pick people who volunteer? What do people think?
Well, can I ask another question? Are people clear in their minds as to whether or not the nominees have to actually come, in our case, from the council? Because as I read through the staff document, I'm not clear on that.
It says the SOs and the ACs. It does not specify, as I recall, anything with regard to where within the SOs or ACs those people would come from.
Right, but the GNSO is not the council. So
I agree. That's my point.
Okay, fine. So one of the questions I asked it, as well in the group as we try and think about qualifications and how we're going to assess people is, you know, how do we ensure consistency and neutrality in assessing any candidates that are from outside the council in relation to candidates from inside the council, too, because there might be a natural tendency for people to favor those they already know and trust and have worked with.
Well, doesn't that become one of the first criterions that we have for any candidates, and that is neutrality?
It's an ideal one, yes.
I mean, obviously we've got to measure that, and that's a challenge. But you know, I think you're onto a good point that does anybody here in this group have the same fear I do that this whole process could become a terrible political mess if the review team members are there with an agenda rather than to perform an objective review?
I think it's a mess for a lot of reasons, but that's one of them. Actually, you know, I have some thoughts on Bill's question in that, you know, I feel pretty strongly that it has to be our position that the GNSO, and not the GNSO Council, I'll get to that in a minute, representative to a particular review team has to be acting in a very broad, neutral, representative capacity, because otherwise you would have to think that the composition would have been structured such that you would have had more representatives from the GNSO to reflect the fact that there are different stakeholder groups and competing interests and the like. And I think it is really important that we not limit this to counselors. And I think it is possible at a very general level to come up with some criteria that at least initially we may be able to start relying on. I mean, somebody that is effective at communicating, somebody who is kind of neutral, I hate to use the word passionate, but, you know, I think the point of these reviews is to have people who can really kind of call it like they see it. But at the same token, somebody who, and again, I hate to use the word political, but I don't really know what other word to use it, but that is capable of working in a very small group where you very well may have very strongly held and divergent views. I mean, and I think there's certainly, you know, a significant number of people within the GNSO. And Chuck, as to the point you mentioned about insiders, I guess it would depend on how you're defining an insider. I mean, there are some folks who believe that anyone who's ever, you know, some folks in my community believe that anybody who's ever even been to an ICANN meeting is an ICANN insider. So, you know, then there are other folks who believe that, you know, it's the people who've been going to ICANN meetings for the past 10 years or people who, you know, sit on council or however. I mean, how do you define that?
Right.
And on the point of insiders, I mean, would you think that the role of the experts would be to temper somewhat, you know, any insider sort of activity? I'm not quite sure in my head what the expert's role is, but that perhaps might be one of them, that they are somewhat neutral and completely independent.
And keep in mind that there are a couple different uses of experts in the proposal. One of them is this is more an expert in terms of process that's kind of helping each review team. And there is also the possibility of experts who or more subject matter experts that can be used by the review team in its review.
On the question of experts, one of the points that I raised on our little list, which we haven't addressed, is also whether or not council should be able to suggest names for consideration in regard to whether this would just be something that the selectors would just sort of pull as a wild card to get to the overall mix that they feel comfortable with.
I have a different question.
Well, before we jump to Christina,
yes.
I think your suggestion, Bill, was a good one, and that's a reasonable thing for us to propose in our comments, that option be provided.
I mean, at least that we'd be able to suggest names, not that they'd be helped to it, right? I mean, in the case of the actual members, they are, if I understand it, bound to select from the pool that's nominated, right? They can't go off reservation in the same way that the Secretary General can with the NAG and IGF and pulling somebody else. They have to pick from there. But with the independent experts, probably you can't make the same demand, so we could at least ask to be able to suggest things that we think would be suitable.
Right. That seems reasonable.
Does anybody have a problem with adding that?
My only concern, Bill, with taking kind of a hard and fast rule is that I would like to think it's unlikely, but what if you end up in a situation where, for whatever reason, there really can be an objective agreement by the selectors that none of the folks who've been nominated really are ideal?
Well,
the problem with taking that position is then you have to say, okay, well, what are the criteria and so on and so forth. But, you know, I just don't have a good sense as to whether it's likely enough to happen that we need to account for it.
And there may be a way to deal with that. Your point's well taken, Christina. The, to use an extreme example here, if we were to just submit one nominee for example, the Accountability and Transparency Review Team, I think we would greatly increase the chance of that problem occurring. That's why it may be wise for us, for several reasons, to consider putting forth multiple nominees, thereby giving the selectors some options, not only for the reason you're citing, okay, but also because they also have to deal with issues of geographic diversity and gender diversity.
Well, you know, Chuck, that's a really good idea. Maybe that's a way to solve the stakeholder allocation issue. In other words, that there would be four GNSO nominees, one from each stakeholder group for each review team slot.
That might be okay.
Might be. No, why not?
Now, well, but at least then you kind of take it off of... take it off of the GNSO's plate as to which stakeholder group gets selected.
You are being political.
Hey, I'm all about everybody getting along all the time. So, you know, I'm just trying to make it easy.
That's good.
What if you don't get a nominee from each of the four?
Well, then that's the prerogative of the stakeholder group.
So, as an internal man, I mean, we have to separate what we're going to actually put into the letter from what our internal mechanism is going to be. I don't think we need to spell out all of our internal modalities in the letter, right? So this is something that will go in the letter.
Now, what are the so let's say we go that approach. We have four nominees, up to four, well, one from each stakeholder group. At some point, we're going to have to talk about the responsibilities of, if one of those people is selected, we're going to have to be very clear that their role there is not to represent their stakeholder group, but rather to make sure that they represent the GNSO in the broader sense, and obviously their primary obligation is to fulfill the review task responsibilities. So we need, I think what I'm saying is, and I think everybody understands this without even saying it, is that going that approach, we should be very clear up front that this isn't if the commercial stakeholder group nominee is the one that Giannis and Peter select in the first review, that person isn't there to, you know, they're the winner, so they get to represent the business views. It's much broader. And I know we all understand that, but I think we need to make that clear up front.
This is Zahid.
Hi.
Yeah. I think that's actually good because it'll take the heat off anyone who's nominated in reporting back and being asked questions from their stakeholder group constituency. I think that's a good idea. We should mention it.
Yeah.
And I guess we would leave the balance considerations to the selectors themselves rather than the GNSO getting into that. Is that the idea?
Yep. We're kind of wandering a little bit, but that's okay. Can I just raise one other point? That there's two different dimensions to the notion of representation, though. I mean, one is somebody goes in there from the business group and says, okay, I only take the business view into consideration. Obviously, that's not what we want. But another aspect of representation is what type of coordination or consultation, if any, should they be having with the GNSO? And in our early conversations on the list, I drew the analogy to the multi-stakeholder advisory group in the IGF, where we've had situations where people who were nominated by particular stakeholder groups then sort of just completely went off on their own, didn't report at all about what was going on, share information, et cetera, and just treated it as a completely, like they were completely autonomous independent actors. And some people had problems with that. And so the question is, what kind of understanding do we want to have of what these non-representatives have in the way of accountability responsibility? I mean, do we feel that they should be reporting to the council from time to time on the main issues, soliciting inputs, passing along any inputs on main issues, or do we just we get them onto the review team and we let them go and we don't hear from them for however many months and whatever happens next?
Unfortunately, on that one, we're back to the working in a vacuum because there's no guidance, and there's a process for each review team develop its own methodology. The review team gets to do that itself, and so the review teams could, in essence, the way it's proposed right now, decide that there is no communication between various SOs and AC members during the process except through the public comment period. In fact, I think the way it's proposed right now is that the intent is that it would be through the public comment periods at the various stages where there would be broader input. So your question's great, Bill, but ultimately it's going to come down to each review team itself developing its methodology. They have the last say in terms of methodology, in terms of what happens. So I think we should talk about what you're suggesting, but it may be determined by the methodology that's finalized by the review team itself.
Well, but Chuck, I actually have to disagree because, I mean, I would think that if you're going to have a review team on transparency, that you may want to have transparency for the whole review team process, and that perhaps one of the things that we could recommend in our comments is that there should be an obligation for communication back. I mean, you know, what I'm not clear on is, are these review teams just essentially kind of going to go off into their black hole and there can be no communications outward until they come up with their report? I mean, if that's the case, I would certainly think that we would have an issue with that. And if it's even open to question, this would be an opportunity for us to take our position that there need to be periodic reports, that at least for the GNSO, the person selected to represent the GNSO, that they do have an ongoing obligation to report back. And, you know, that kind of brings me back to my, you know, do we need to be thinking about setting up kind of support teams for these people? Because I have to think this is going to be a huge time commitment, and that in order to get people who are really able to participate effectively without ending up with kind of the same people who participate on everything, because they're the ones who have the time and they're the ones, you know, whose job it is, everybody on this call included, you know, do we want to create a mechanism so that those people have others available who can assist them? You know, what exactly is the role of the consultant? You know, do we all think that everyone needs to have a consultant? I'm concerned that, the whole kind of appointment and selection of a consultant process is going to eat into a huge chunk of the available work time.
Yeah, by the way, what did you disagree with? I'm not sure.
I disagreed with the idea that you know, we're kind of operating in a vacuum. I mean, we are operating in a vacuum, but I think it gives us an opportunity to say this is how we think it should be.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, we're in agreement there.
Okay,
I was just simply pointing out that the way it's mapped out right now in the proposal is that the review team itself adopts its own methodology. So we can suggest all we want. Ultimately, they're going to make the final decision, and that's all the more reason why we should get the input in now.
Right, but I guess my point is that to me, whether or not there's any openness about the review team activity kind of goes above and beyond, in my view, what should be considered the methodology that each review team can pick for itself. In other words, I think there should be kind of certain general principles that apply to all the review teams, and that above and beyond that, sure, they can pick, you know, how often they meet, da-da-da-da-da, that type of thing. But I do think it's important that there be certain baseline principles that apply to all the review teams. Because otherwise, trying to, even if you're not wanting to participate, but you just want to kind of stay on top of what's going on, it's going to be impossible.
Yeah, that's a good point to make in our comments.
Chuck, I agree with Christina that I understand your point that the review teams are going to set their own methodology, but I think it would not be bad for us to raise this point early on and suggest that we think that they, at least for the GNSO, but as a more general rule, it would be good for the participants to take on those kinds of obligations of communicating from time to time and being able to serve as a sort of a translator of any inputs.
Well, and how are they going to gather input as between public comment periods unless they have the opportunity to come back?
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree with Christina on that. I mean, I would be uncomfortable if I didn't see the review team members from one end of the year to the next, particularly if we're endorsing them from the outset. You know, I do think there needs to be some sort of check and balance on the review team itself, so I certainly would be in favor of seeing some sort of periodic high-level report in between the public comment period.
Hi, this is Zaid. Can I get in the queue?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was thinking, I mean, this is a group of people who are going to have to come out with what could be a criticism of processes. It's a critique. And whatever they submit back as a report to the GNSO is a public interim report. And my question, I guess, is to what extent of detail or attribution as to who's saying what and what views have been discussed within the review teams would be a question, because it may impact the level of independence, if you will, or the pressure that may be put on them if they were to come out before they submitted the final report as to what kind of a critical stand they were going to take. I mean, after all, the board will be able to see what they're saying if the GNSO gets reports. It's just a question. I'm not suggesting that they should be opaque and not be transparent, but it's just something to consider.
Okay. I wasn't actually planning on trying to share this meeting, but do people want me to take a cue and pursue a more structured approach, or should we stay kind of more freewheeling?
I think the freewheeling is working pretty well.
Okay, that's fine. Just to be sure.
Sorry, I was just going to say, pick up on Christina's point about it being quite an onerous undertaking for one person to take on, given the length of the reviews and the amount of work that they have to do. What would people think about having an alternate? I think, didn't the IRT team have something similar? And how did that work? Was it effective?
It was. You know, and I know that they had alternates available for the STI. I just think that where you've got such important work being done in such a concentrated period of time, you know, there are going to be times when people, you know, their other professional personal obligations may prevent them from being at a meeting. And I think having alternates are a great suggestion, whether it would fly or not. I think it's worth a shot.
Christina, could you say more about what you think a support team would do? Because
without having a real good sense as to what exactly each member of the review team is going to actually physically do, it's hard to say. Having said that, you know, it may be that some of the responsibilities and some of the work involves, you know, kind of reviewing current practice, collecting information, you know, assessing, you know, various, you know, maybe, for example, I don't even know, but the you know, one of the teams that's going to look at, you know, accountability and transparency, and there's the whole analysis of the public comment period, and you know, people have to look at how many public comment periods were there, how long were they, how long were the documents put out, how many people commented, you know, how many different people commented, da-da-da-da-da. I mean, that if that's the type of work that is expected to be done by the members of the review team, that's a huge undertaking. And I just think that it may be the case that some of the things the members of the review team are going to be asked to do are things that it would be great to have a group of people, you know, little worker bees, that you could call on for help.
Not a bad idea, actually. It becomes a resource pool.
Right.
It's specifically identified that the review team member or members, in our case, could consult with as needed if they have questions.
Right, or if they just, you know, need assistance on physically getting something done.
I understand your thinking, Christina, but I worry about how some people might interpret that. I mean, I could easily imagine some folks saying, well, there's these kind of nebulously formed support teams that operate on their own logics, and who knows who's really involved in them and what are they really doing, and then that could turn into a big debating point about how that all is operating.
Then maybe each review team, as opposed to each GNSO representative on a review team, could have its own support team. I don't know. I mean, does
that
staff have
sense.
Any information about what kind of resources are going to be available for these teams?
Just talks about administrative support in the budget review, but then it defines administrative support as being an external contractor hired for the meeting rooms, meeting organization.
Right, yeah. I mean, I didn't see anything that really got into kind of the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of money really dedicated to that, so I don't think it's for thing that, you know, they would be doing more aligned with what you're saying, Christina.
Would be
I wanted to comment. I'm not sure we know what type of staff support would be expected for this. In fact, I think we've been sort of been told that you know, staff's really just isn't likely to be actively involved like we do with, you know, GNSO activities, for example. So I think it's going to be a different structure, but we just don't have enough information at this point.
I mean, just looking at the working methods, it looks as if the review team is going to be expected to, you know, gather quantitative and qualitative facts from different internet communities, making use of the most appropriate data gathering tools, organize consultations with the community. And then there's this independent consultant who, you know, as you noted, Caroline, is really just going to be kind of administrative. I just think that this could end up being such a huge amount of work for one person that you're really going to limit your pool of people who are interested in participating because they just can't.
Yeah, I think you're right.
What about the idea of review teams for the RC as a whole rather than for individual people?
I would be fine with that. I mean, that would accomplish that same goal.
What was your point again, Bill? I missed it.
I'm sorry, I garbled it, I was saying. What about Christina, in her comments, sort of offered an alternative that there could be support team for the review team rather than for the individual representatives to the review team? That might be something worth suggesting if people think it's a good idea.
Yeah, that seems much more complicated in terms of setting it up because of the diversity of the total review team. How would we do it? How would that be? I can envision a support team for the GNSO people on the review team. It's a little harder for me to envision how that could be implemented in any ready fashion for the whole review team?
That would be up to the review team to decide. I worry about the optics, Chuck, of particular representatives having a support team.
Yeah.
Other representatives don't have a support team. There's no clear rules for how the support teams operate, et cetera. You know.
Yeah, it's a legitimate concern, Bill. I don't disagree with you. I think, too, that the GNSO review team members on any given team would always have the ability to come back to those of us in the GNSO if they needed assistance, needed questions answered, and things like that. So that kind of exists already, and it avoids the optical issues. I have a totally different topic when you want to get to it, Bill, that I think we should comment on.
Go ahead.
And that is the whole idea of the indicators. And I commented in our email on our email list in this regard. I think, in my own personal opinion, that one of the most important things in this whole process is the identification of the indicators that the review teams will use, because the more objective and measurable those can be made, the less chances of this being a political process rather than a legitimate review. There are going to be those. There are always those who want to expand ICANN's mission in our community, and to the extent that the indicators are established, are objectively measurable, that the review team members then have to, you know, weigh those, that lessens the chance of political activity and going beyond ICANN's mission.
But, Chuck, we debated this in our little list, I think before most of the people on this call joined the list, but I have less faith than Chuck that you're going to have objective metrics that are going to obviate all the political problems. But, Chuck, just one thing I wanted to point out to you. In looking at the document, page 12, it says that the indicators be defined by the review teams during a face-to-face meeting. So that implies that the indicators are going to be developed after the group has already been formulated.
Yeah, I agree. But there's a public comment period associated with that process as well, if I recall.
Right, but I mean,
all I'm saying, Bill, is that to me it's important for us to emphasize the importance of the indicators and how they are ultimately defined in this process. I'm not suggesting we try to define them now, but that to the extent that they can be objectively measurable, and I know that's an ideal, that's important.
I was just saying, you were expressing the hope that they would be able to do it. I don't think that's been heading. But anyway, let's see if we can identify takeaways in terms of what this group is going to try to do in the short term. On the size, I mean, we're writing, is this letter going to Giannis? Is that correct?
I didn't understand all you said there, Bill.
Sorry, it's my Skype. Are we writing to Giannis here, the letter that we were suggesting?
No, it's in response to the public request for public comments on the proposed approach.
Well, just so there, okay. We want to specify something about the size thing that we think that the council should have too, and then we'll define internally how we're going to do that. Is that a point of agreement or no?
Yeah, and again, let me back up a half a step here. There are two tasks we have. One of them is to prepare some draft public comments from the council. Secondly, and this doesn't need to be a part of the public comments itself, we need to be developing our own internal methodology for endorsing nominees.
Right.
I was going to ask if part two of that, I mean, I think both should be done in parallel, part one and part two, because part two could throw up some comments that we need to put forward for the public comment period. But
Thank
I don't see that part two needs to be done for the end of January. Is that right?
Yeah. The comments are due the end of January.
But we don't necessarily need to have come up with our own internal process for...
That's correct. But I agree with you that doing these things in parallel, not selecting the candidates, but doing them in parallel is very important because they are interdependent.
Right.
So what I was trying to ask is, for the points that we would want to have, what points do people feel should be included in the public comments, and then the modalities, internal modalities, are separate. One point that was raised was the size issue. Are we in agreement that we should have the text on that point?
Yeah, I think there's been enough communication even in the council as a whole on that issue that needs to be included.
Okay. Then in terms of the other points that might go into that kind of a public comment, which of the ones that we were just discussing would we want to raise? Do we want to raise the question of support teams, alternates, and those kinds of issues?
I think we should, yeah. I think we certainly need to stress the point that adequate support is needed for the review team members, and maybe even go as far as putting forward an idea like having alternates and administrative teams, as Christina said.
Hey, Bill, it's Liz, and at the appropriate time, I'd like to ask whether you want to consider adding another point that we haven't discussed yet.
Well, there's no time like the present.
Okay. one thing I was wondering is whether anyone's concerned about the potential, how they would treat a review of GNSO aspects of particularly I'm looking at 9.1 and, you know, the fact that we have GNSO improvements underway to revise the policy development process to facilitate enhanced cross-community deliberations. For example, they're adding another review onto implementation work associated with a previous work review that we haven't implemented yet, and whether we should raise the need to provide some deference to or opportunity for all the improvements that we're still working on to get done before we review them. Or some way of recognizing that significant work is underway and that a review vis-a-vis the GNSO is going to be a review of an evolving situation.
Where is the point made that you're referring to about the GNSO?
Well, it's not GNSO specific in the AOC. In 9.1, where we it discusses ensuring accountability, transparency, and the interests of global internet users in the AOC, and where it talks about the policy. For example, I'm just using this as an example. The policy aspects of ICANN's commitment to robust public input. We are in the process of enhancing our ways of soliciting public input and our ways of managing working groups and making them more open and our ways of enhancing the PDP, things that are related to the AOC review. And so my question is, how is the review team going to treat that work in progress? And does the GNSO want to point out that we're in a transition point where it could be premature to examine certain things that are already being examined and where an effort is already underway to improve them?
Wouldn't those sorts of things, if a good methodology is being used, I would have to think that the review team would have to take into consideration the evolving nature of changes in their review.
One hope. And so, your point is to establish some position of deference to the process you've got underway already?
Yeah, or, I mean, I'm not sure. It's more a question, again, than a specific suggestion of how to handle it, but I would be concerned that they're going to review something that's in the process of being reviewed right now. And like, for example, the PDP, and our, you know, we are trying to do many of the things that this AOC is focused on, but to my mind, it's premature to judge works in progress and their adequacy when we're exactly trying to address those concerns in the detail that's underway. In other words, two reviews at once is, you know, or one review following on the heels of another review before we've had a chance to implement that review might not be prudent. So you either want to give deference to the GNSO's pending work and maybe get a waiver on, you know, or something to avoid a situation where they're reviewing and adding on to something that we're trying to work on right now. You don't want too much instruction. You know, they could judge outcomes before we develop them.
Does that look at the draft terms of reference that staff put together for the accountability transparency team? Talks about the board, the gap, the public input process. It's not specific to, it's not clear to me how much they were going to be doing into the GNSO.
I think you're right. It's not specific to the GNSO. I'm only I'm only acknowledging GNSO is the major policy development entity within ICANN.
Liz, I think if you look at the draft terms of reference for the first review, and you see paragraph 2E, which is sort of reproduction from 9.1,
right.
It talks about the assessing the policy development processes to facilitate enhanced cross-community deliberations and effective timely policy development. So your point about PDB and how that process is at the moment being implemented sort of might tie in there. So that would be reviewed by the review team. And I think that just sort of having that placeholder there, maybe at this stage or maybe at the public comment stage, I don't know which one's more appropriate, but would help in giving some sort of context to the reviewers to say, look, hold on, before you review this, just make sure you know that, you know, this is an ongoing process. I think that's a fair comment.
That's all I'm saying. Thanks. Yeah.
And we'll have council representatives there, and if we do have a mechanism in place for them to convey inputs, in a timely manner, and it should be the case that, you know, a sense of where the council's view is on that to be passed on effectively, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is another reason to argue for the kind of approach that we were suggesting before, where they might be a sealed box entirely.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like a very specific action item out of this call that would be helpful is a first draft, even if it's just an outline, of what our comments might include for this group to critique a little bit further on the list and see if we can get to a point where, because very quickly we need to get some sort of a draft set of comments that we can put out to the whole council for them to share with their various constituencies and stakeholder groups. Members.
Right. Well, and this is why I was asking which elements of the various points we've covered do we see as being germane to this comment. I mean, the numbers is one thing, obviously, the question of whether it's a closed box or how independent the people are is another point. Which of the other points that we've raised need to go into this thing?
Well, at this stage, if it would be better to err on including too many things, and then we can trim it down.
Okay. Good point. Well,
This is Zaid. I had a question on the word consensus that's been used through the document. It's also in the draft terms of reference. And having just come out of the SDI, I'm just concerned, how do we define consensus? Because it says if there isn't consensus, then it would be majority. That's what the TOR said, the draft TOR said. Now, how do we define consensus? Is that universal consensus, or Would that be consensus of some other definition? Maybe Margie can help us here.
Yeah, I actually don't know the answer to that. Consensus is one of those terms that just doesn't have a definition across projects. And I know in the S group, we came up with the definition because we didn't really know how to apply it. And I think that's probably a fair point to raise in the comments as well.
Because if you have one representative from the GNSO and they don't agree with many things going on in the review team, but the definition of consensus is such that even if they disagree, it would still be termed as a consensus review team report, that would be something we may want to think about.
Yeah, I don't know whether they're contemplating also minority reports and things like that.
Yeah, it does.
They
did contemplate that.
Okay, good. Are there people who haven't spoken much who would like to do something at this point?
Bill, it's Caroline. Are you able to summarize then the points that we've covered and that you think we might sort of kick off on? Just kind of making a list here myself. Just perhaps we can cross-check with each other. So we've spoken about the size of the review team, proposal of experts, adequate support of review team members in whatever shape or format that takes, objective indicators, to Chuck's point, representation of stakeholder groups by the review team members, and you know, we haven't really come to any firm conclusion as to what form that would take.
And communication.
And communication, yeah.
Chuck, are these your notes down here, the discussion notes?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand you, Bill.
At the bottom of this page, are these your discussion notes?
No, it's me, Margie. I've just been taking notes as we've discussed.
So that's helpful. Thank you.
I had one more question, guys. On page 11 of 11, they talk about the definition of review terms of reference and the TORs. And it says that the proposed process says that the board would recommend the adoption of resulting terms of references. So the recommendations would come from the board, but the review teams will be the final decision makers. I'm wondering, since this would entail assessment and evaluation of board as well, should the board be recommending stuff on the TOR for the review team to then make a decision on? And just wondered how that would work.
Zahid, where were you again in the document?
I'm reading from page 11 of 11.
Uh-huh.
And I'm reading the last line on page 11 of 11, which says, after considering the initial proposal and community input, the board will recommend adoption of the resulting terms of reference, going on to page 12.
Uh-huh.
Adoption of the resulting terms of reference. Review teams will make the final decision on the adoption of the terms of reference of their review. So I'm unclear as to, you know, so it seems it goes to the board, then the board approves it, adopts it, and then it goes to the review team, and the review team then seems to have this unclear power of either overriding all of that or not, and I'm not clear on that.
I think that the review team does have the power to override it the way it's proposed right now, and I think what the board is trying to do is to, you know, fulfill what they believe their fiduciary responsibilities are and have some good input there, but ultimately because the review teams need to be independent of the board, and they say that right up front, that the review team has the right to override.
Okay.
Now, there's a good deal of sovereignty for the review teams in there, which I think is quite admirable, I think.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of starting to draft something, do we want to identify just a couple of people who will inspire putting together a first couple of paragraphs that would touch on some of the main points that we raised, or what?
Well, Caroline, you've been doing a good job. Can you work with Bill on that?
Sure, I'd be happy to, yeah.
Okay.
Why don't we talk offline, Bill, and kind of organize how we'll do that between ourselves and hopefully come up with something over the next couple of days for the subgroup.
Yeah.
It's probably easier once we have a straw man, we can, you know, it'll help focus us all a bit better, I think.
Sure. Does anybody else want to join that effort, or you leave it to the two of us to throw something on the table which you can then rip apart? Okay.
And if you guys just send something around to the list, then we should be able to do quite a bit of work on the list. We really should shoot for a target of not later than the middle of next week of getting something out to the council. Otherwise, we're going to be running out of time very quickly.
Right. Well, hopefully we can get something, Caroline and I, together as a first starting. Oh, Vahid wants to join? Okay, so then the three of us could try and put something together by hopefully Sunday or so that we could put to the group, maybe earlier, I don't know.
By the way, Zahid volunteered to join the two of you in your work.
Right. I said that. In terms of timeline, does that sound okay? If we come back to you with a few paragraphs, starting points, and say the next, what are we? Is it Wednesday? Caroline, do you have an ability to move faster than I'm currently thinking, or no?
And then the rest of us should respond. If you get something out to the rest of us by Sunday, then we should try and turn around our comments within 24, 48 hours, and hopefully by Wednesday of next week have something, even if it's not totally perfect yet, that we can start vetting with the full council.
That sounds right to me. It's okay with others.
Bill, this is Margie. Do we need to set up another call, or do you guys want to do the next phase of this work simply online?
I think the three of us could probably Skype and figure it out and so on. I don't think we need to get too complicated, would be my guess.
Okay.
I don't know what your time parameters are. Well, we'll figure it out.
Okay.
No, that's fine, Bill. I can join it. No worries. I mean, I'm able to adjust as long as we're sort of on the time zones. Maybe a little bit of difficulty, but I should be able to work with it. No problem.
All right. Okay. It's been an hour. Do we have any? Are there any main highlight points that we haven't touched on already as a starting point?
Yeah. Just the comments are the first priority. I think once we get those going, we can continue our work in terms of our own internal GNSO methodology on this thing, but that's not as time sensitive. At the same time, like Caroline pointed out, it does affect some of our comments possibly.
Okay. Well, the three of us will go off to the woodshed and try and come back to you all with something in a couple of days.
Good.
All right?
Thanks.
Great. Thanks, everyone.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Take care. Bye.
All right. Bye.